Lesson 2 of the nature of God is on the names of God. Names are important things. Like, even to us, names are important. We think carefully about what we name our children. We want it to fit well. We want it to sound good with the last name. We may consider what a name means. We try to use a name that's going to be good for that child. And it's the name by which you're known your whole life. Sometimes people change their names, but it's not very common in our culture, in our society, to change your first name, at least. About the closest we get is women changing their last names when they get married. But really, that's about our only exposure to the idea of a name change. This isn't the case in the Bible. It's not really a Bible thing. It's more of an ancient Near East culture thing, that they viewed names to be even more important than we do. For the most part, we want names to just sound right together. I joked with Lauren that when she was pregnant with Nathan, but before we decided what to name him, that he ought to be Landon London London. There's a reason why we didn't go with that. It was not a name that sounded right to us and to most people. But we think carefully about what names we want. And everyone has different opinions on that, of course. Some people like more unusual names. Some people like more traditional ones. And there's a great deal of personal opinion with that. And of course, that's perfectly fine. Some people may even look at what that name means. I have a hard time remembering what all of these names mean. I can remember what Melody means. That's pretty easy. But I know my name means God is my judge. But I can't remember what Nathan means off the top of my head. And that kind of goes to show that that's not really the most important thing that we think about. What does the name mean? Again, that's not really the case when we see the ancient Near East culture. The meaning of these names was extremely important. And just like we know the meanings of words, just ordinary words, they knew the meanings of names. And they connected those very tightly, very closely together. And they would go so far as often to change a person's name to reflect some change in their personality or their character or some major event in their lives. And so we have many examples of this in the Old Testament and even in the New Testament. When God promised to Abram that he would make him the father of a great nation, that through him the whole world would be blessed, he changed his name from Abram to Abraham. And we go, great, Abraham, that sounds a little bit better, but that's not what that was for. It's because there's a change in the meaning. The name Abraham literally means father of a multitude. And when God changed his name to that, that was reinforcing the promise. It's kind of an interesting name for a person who doesn't yet have any kids, right? Why call him father of a multitude? And it was years and years before he even had his first son. And so the name must have seemed like a slap in the face to him when he and Sarah were wondering, is this really going to happen? You might recall that they had some period of doubt where they wondered, is God really going to follow through with this promise, or do we need to help this along? And that's how they ended up with Ishmael being Abraham's son with Hagar. Sarai's name was changed to Sarah, a similar kind of thing. It means princess. And again, that's to show that a whole nation would come through her. That there's an importance to her lineage. Again, a strange thing to say for a woman who hasn't had any children yet, but it reinforces the promise that God made. So all throughout the Bible, the names we find are very significant. And I'm not saying that literally every single person back then chose names for that reason, but it was way more common than it is today. And while God did specifically change some people's names, usually it was not something that God did. Usually it was something that you would change for yourself, or that other people would start calling you a different name, like with the example of Barnabas. That was not his name to begin with, but Barnabas means son of encouragement. And he was such an encouraging person that people started calling him that. So while we would find it strange, you know my name is Danny, and if you started calling me Steve, I probably wouldn't answer to it. But back then, they would change names like that to reflect personality, character, and major life events. Yeah, we use nicknames now. And sometimes those nicknames have a special meaning. Sometimes they don't. Again, sometimes they can just be things that we like. But for them, there was often more significance to them. So we have some examples. David means beloved. Nabal means fool. Ishmael means man of the Lord. Lots of names like that, and those names were chosen very specifically. I don't know why Nabal's parents called him fool, or if that was something that his name was changed to because he was a fool, but that is actually a reflection on him and not just a random name like we have random names today. So, with that basis, and remembering that names are important to God, that when he created the world and created Adam and Eve, Adam began naming everything he saw. God did not start out with everything having a name. He named man and woman, and then Adam chose Eve's name to be Eve. But then the names of the animals, the names of the plants, Adam came up with those. That was an integral part of creation. It was one of the first things done with a new world, that things needed to have a name. It's just a natural thing for us. We don't like using pronouns and generic terms constantly. We like to have an actual name for things. With this basis, we're going to be talking about the names of God today. And we have kind of missed out on this, because we just tend to say God, or maybe Father, and Lord. And God and Lord, well, those are just two different names that mean the same thing, right? Wrong. They don't. And there are very specific names used in Scripture that are often lost in translation, and they tell us something about God's nature. So we're going to see some of these from the Hebrew, from the Greek, mainly Hebrew, and hopefully this will help us to know God better. Questions or comments so far? Yeah, it's an... Yeah, and Adam, that was part of Adam's job. He was supposed to take care of the world around him, and part of doing that was naming things. So yeah, we can speculate on how exactly he did that or how he came up with those names. I don't know what criteria he used. And I don't know if those names have much connection to what different languages call things now, or if those original names have been lost. There's a lot of things we don't know. But we know that having names is important. And in fact, in any culture, the things that you have around you more are things you have more names for. You see all those differences between. And so the example that everybody uses for that is the Inuit people up in Minora, the Eskimos, right? Having all these different names for different kinds of snow. We pretty much say snow, sleet, ice, slush. That's about all we can do, and they have more than that because, well, they're a little more familiar with snow than we are. They can see just from experience different variations of snow, and they have names for those because it's a part of their everyday life. We come up with terms for things that we are around all the time. And of course, languages evolve and change as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm with them. Okay, so on page 14, before we look at some actual names for God, we need to talk about how his name is holy and reverend, or what the ESV says that I have and some other translations say is holy and awesome. I like using the term awesome, but I'm a little wary of it because awesome also is a very casual term that we use that just means, well, that's really cool. And when, if your Bible says, for reverend, awesome, you know, like Psalm 111, verse 9, holy and awesome is his name, that's not saying, wow, God sure is cool. It's not that. What does awesome mean in the non-casual sense? Excuse me?
Amazed.
Yes, that it's something that gives a sense of amazement or awe, right? And actually, our word awful started out that way too. If you read some old literature, you know, we have kind of switched awful to mean that something is bad, but awful used to mean basically the same thing as awesome, that it made you full of awe. It's interesting how, as languages evolve, sometimes things can flip in meaning back and forth as people start using something sarcastically, and then the sarcastic use becomes more common than the normal use, and it flips around. Awesome didn't do exactly that same thing, but it has become a more casual term where we say, boy, this weather sure is awesome. That car sure is awesome. That computer is awesome. Now, that's fine. There's really nothing wrong with doing that, as long as you understand, but that's a different kind of awesome than the awesome that God is. Yes?
Can I go back to this a little bit? When you were talking about the meanings of names, you mentioned it just now, how words.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think also recently we were talking about how like our parents give us names. I think when we're naming our children, our parents are naming us, this is not an absolute, but we give them names. We're given names because our parents, and we as parents, want something great to happen for our children.
Yeah.
For our children to be great things. So we give them these great names so they can, you know, Aristotle.
Yeah.
If I name my child Aristotle, I'm
expecting. Yeah.
Name, right.
Right.
Thinking about though, you also have a name. What is your first name, middle name, last name? Whichever one of those names, you know, you were given, it means something.
Yeah,
the
it does.
Kennedys, it means something.
Yeah.
So you're expected to do great things. And
yeah.
You're trying to live up to those things, and sometimes you can't.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about. Jacob, when him and Esau were born, Jacob did live up to his name as a trickster.
Yeah.
You know, one that, you know, did things that he did, but God gave him a new name. So by giving him that new name, you not only have a new name, now you're not to live up to that old name.
Yeah.
You know, you are to change and be something different, just as we are when we become Christians. You know, before I was not a Christian.
Yeah.
I did un-Christian-like things.
Yeah.
As a Christian, sometimes I do that too, but now I'm reminded I'm a Christian.
Right.
I have to be like Christ.
Yeah. And that is another type of name that we wear, that it may not be literally our name, but we bear the name of Christian, which means Christ-like. And if there's ever something to live up to, that's it. I call myself a Christian. That means I'm striving to be like Jesus the Christ. And when I sin, I'm not being like Jesus. And so I have not lived up to that name. That's a good point that you make, that Sometimes our names are just because they sound good, but a lot of times it is that we're trying to, we hope that our kids could live up to something great, or it's very common in Western cultures to use a name that is somewhere in your family. Some people literally do, you know, the same name passed from father to son to be a senior and a junior and a third and a fourth. Some people don't do that, but borrow other names elsewhere in the family tree, or borrow a middle name. I share the same middle name as my father, and Nathan shares the same middle name as me as well. And that's a connection there of some belonging and some, I want you to try to live up to the kind of life that I have lived. And these are the sort of inherent things that we do with names, and it's not a hard and fast rule. People have all sorts of ways that they name their children, and that's perfectly fine. But we understand that there is a significance to names. There's a reason why Jezebel's not a popular name anymore. And in fact, most of the people who are doing something like Jezebel, they want to that meaning because they're trying to be edgy. And it's just kind of a weird look, honestly. But Jezebel doesn't have a good connotation because of who she was in the Bible. And she doesn't really show any redeeming qualities in the Bible, unlike some of the other people who were flawed in Scripture. And we may not want to imitate those flaws, but they also did good things. So if you name your son Peter after the Peter of the Bible, you're not saying, I hope you deny Jesus, and I hope that you have doubts, and I hope that you are quick to jump into things without thinking them through. Those were true of Peter. But Peter was also bold and courageous and eventually matured and figured it out. And he was an apostle of Jesus Christ. He was dedicated to doing the right thing. And when he messed up, he fixed it. Well, those are good things that, you know, might make you want to name a child Peter. So there are things like that that connect names to meanings or to hopes that we have for our children. And so even though we don't use names exactly the same way that they did in the ancient Near East culture, we understand why they would do something like that. So when we're looking at God's name being holy and awesome, or holy and reverend, we are supposed to fear and respect the name of the Lord. You have a couple passages written for you in the lesson. Deuteronomy 28:58 says, "Fear this glorious and awesome name." Well, we say, why? It's just a name. A name is just a name, but a name means something. A name represents something. The name of the Lord is not just a name, not just a title, but it carries with it meaning about who God is. And if you understand who God is, then even his name will make you tremble. So what does it mean to take God's name in vain? Yeah, use it flippantly or disrespectfully. And excuse me? Yeah, and it's just such a common exclamation that's used, but it's interesting that it's not that combination of words that's wrong. In the Bible, we see many of the Psalms says, "Oh, my God," but it's not a mindless expression. It is literally addressing God and calling him mine. I am acknowledging he is my God, and I am petitioning him. So it's not like a magic phrase that's wrong. It's the attitude behind it. That if I'm just throwing around God's name in vain, flippantly, without respect, or without the weight that name carries, that's wrong. that is showing that I don't really respect who God is. God is so reverend, so awesome, so holy, that even his name deserves respect. And I've made this point in a lesson before, but it's for this reason that I actually believe that euphemisms for the name of God are worse, not better. We have various euphemisms that are supposed to be the lighter version, the more family-friendly version, that you might say gosh instead of God, and well, now that makes it better. I'm not taking God's name in vain because I've changed it. But if the whole point of taking God's name in vain being wrong is that we're using it flippantly, then is modifying it and making it even more casual the way to fix this? I think that's going the wrong direction. That instead of making it more and more casual and getting it farther and farther from its real meaning, we need to think carefully about how we use the name of God. And that if I say something about God, that it's done with thought, it's done with careful consideration, and that I am not blaspheming the name of the Lord just because I'm feeling some strong emotion or because I need a filler word for my sentences.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a command from God, but it is an interesting example. And we're going to talk some more about some of the things they did with that name, Yahweh or Jehovah, a little bit later on in here too. That the Jews took that name very seriously. And in fact, religious Jews today still do, actually. But they do not lightly say that. And they, in fact, many of them prefer not to say Yahweh at all. And we'll get there as to why that is. But the point here is that taking God's name in vain is not a magical phrase or a certain combination of words. It's the idea of using God's name flippantly, using it without respect. And so telling jokes about God, I think we have to be really, really careful with, because that can very quickly cross that line of just being flippant. Using the name of God or a euphemism for the name of God as a filler word, as an exclamation of joy or frustration or anger, that's not what God's name is for. He means something more than that. And so find a different word. Find something else to say instead of bringing God into that. Jennifer. Yeah, it all contributes to a reduced respect for God. And should we be surprised that most people equate God to Santa Claus or to a genie in a bottle or to, you know, a nice old man who lives upstairs? These things feed off of each other. If you are constantly using God's name flippantly, then that helps feed a flippant view of God. And if you have a flippant view of God, then you see nothing wrong with using his name flippantly, and that feeds itself until God does not have that weight and that, you know, grandeur that he really has. we need to revere God. And I hope that this book, that this this class that we're going through, will help us to deepen our reverence for God. It's a very important thing, and it actually will help us in a lot of ways. It makes worship more meaningful. It makes it easier to stay away from sin, because I know that sin is an offense to the holy and reverend God, and so I don't want to do that. It helps us in wanting to go and to teach others. There's a lot of good in having the right view of God. It's hard for us to remember it sometimes because we can't see God with our own eyes, but one day we're going to be in his presence. And do you think we're going to be cracking jokes about God or just throwing his name around flippantly? If you wouldn't do it in his presence, why are you doing it here? It really just doesn't make sense. You look in the Old Testament and you see that taking the name of God in vain was a capital offense. You blaspheme the name of the Lord, you are stoned, you die. I'm not necessarily advocating that we, you know, make it a capital offense today, but boy, we'd have to make some pretty serious changes to our society if it were. We'd run out of people pretty quickly at the rate that we're going. And so we should not be numbed to the seriousness of this offense just because it is so common. I think, sadly, we view taking God's name in vain as the least offensive of all of the objectionable words out there. Taking God's name in vain is not exactly profanity. It's not exactly cursing. It's in a little bit of a different category, but it gets lumped in with those kinds of words a lot. But those four-letter words that we are offended over, and rightfully so, because these words that have dirty and impure meanings are not fit for Christians to be saying, you know, why is that so much worse than blaspheming the name of God and making it very casual? I mean, they're different categories, but I don't think we should treat that as the lightest of offenses. Sorry, Brian? Yeah, is his name any less important in the New Covenant than it was under the Law of Moses? What has changed fundamentally about God, even with it being a New Covenant? God doesn't make it a capital offense now, but that doesn't mean he's happy about it. Jaylee? Yeah. One of the other things mentioned is falsely swearing by God's name was an extremely serious offense. And you hear people do it today, too, with a very casual kind of swearing. I don't mean cursing. I mean like swearing an oath, saying, I swear to God, or I swear by God's throne, or things like that. Doing that so casually is very, very serious. You really ought not to just throw that around. In fact, I know a lot of people, a lot of Christians, are uncomfortable with any kind of swearing of oaths. I think Jesus' point in saying swear not at all was addressing their very flippant kind of oaths that were looking for loopholes, that if I swear by God's throne, that's one thing, but if I swear by the earth, that's another, or if I swear by myself, that's different. Jesus is addressing more the fact that people are looking for loopholes. The equivalent today of, I don't mean what I'm saying if my fingers are crossed behind my back, right? It's an arbitrary loophole that you've created so that you're allowed to lie. That's basically what they were doing there. So I don't know that swearing an oath is wrong in and of itself today. We can, you know, swear on about serious things. We make vows of all kinds of things. Marriage vows is a similar kind of thing. But if you swear by the name of God, That better be something you've thought about for more than just 2 seconds. That better be something more than just what pops out of your mouth at the slightest provocation. Yes, sir. Yeah.
It doesn't matter what dispensation we're in or whatever, you know, that we're now calling on the new covenant. God is still the same. Yet, the punishment probably is not the same. I'm looking at what you had, what you read in Deuteronomy 28, mm-hmm. verse 58. It says, if you do not carefully observe all the words of this law that you have written in this book, and I don't want to take this out of context, there's so much more. We'll talk about the center and the structure itself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That you may fear this glorious and awesome name, the Lord your God. And in verse 59 says, then, and this then means if you do not fear the Lord your God, then the name of his name, then the Lord will bring upon you and your descendants extraordinary plagues, great and prolonged plagues, and serious and prolonged sickness. I know that Proverbs tells us that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And the thing is that we first read this tonight, I immediately thought about Revelation and how at the end of Revelation, even though it doesn't say amen, but it says that if you do not follow everything that's in the book, you add or take away from it. That's what he's saying. He's going to add to us the plagues that are in this book. I don't know. His name is being everything about God we need to respect. And until we do that, then we're just going to use his name for it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sad even how many religious people do it. It's sad even how many Christians do it. It's ironic how many atheists I've seen use God's name in vain. Like you're using the name of a God you don't believe in. But actually, shouldn't that tell us something about it? That it's so casual and so meaningless that even an atheist could do it, right? There's no weight to it. They don't even really see that as a contradiction because that is how much the name has been diluted. Don't use God's name that way.
You know, sometimes, man, I'm sitting in my office or someone will use God's name, man, and I will immediately say, God had nothing to do with that.
Yeah.
Did. And that person will sit there like, yeah, you know what? You're right. I said, yeah. Why are you blaming God for that? He didn't do anything.
Yeah. Right. No, but it's very important that we use God's name seriously. And I don't mean don't use God's name. We should talk about God, and we should say, oh, praise God for this, or thank God. I think you can say that flippantly, thank God, but I think you can say it seriously, thank God. That, you know, it depends really on the attitude that you have as you say it. So just think about what you say before you say it. And as somebody whose, you know, words tend to just flow from the mouth very quickly, I acknowledge how easy it is for things to just come out. But when we're talking about God, we really can't afford to be that flippant. Brian? Right.
Even it's within gratitude, are you saying it just to say it, or are you actually giving him
right
praise?
Yes, are you? Is it just mindless? Are you really attributing it to him? And if you are attributing it to him, is it something you should attribute to him? People, you know, throw, like Jaylee's saying, put God's name into things that don't have anything to do with God. That can be problematic, of course. You blame God for the consequences of your own dumb choices. Well, is that God's fault, or is it my fault? So what about, we, like I said, in a lot of these translations it says holy and awesome, or some say holy and reverend. What about calling a person reverend? That's one of the questions you have at the end of a lesson, but is it right to call me Reverend Danny, or somebody who went to seminary Reverend so-and-so? Is that a good thing to do, Brian? We don't. And it is something that is universally associated with God, with power, with authority. Jasmine?
If I'm not mistaken, it means honored, and it's putting you as some type of high position that isn't.
Well, what if I'm okay with you honoring me? Okay, good answer. Right, and some of this is, I think, the glorification of clergy that we have in religion, and I don't call myself clergy, but you know what I mean, and that priests and pastors and clergymen, or whatever they're called in whatever religion you're talking about, that these people are elevated to the point of having some kind of special relationship with God, or special connection with God, some special inspiration from him, or they have a higher level of holiness and righteousness, that they are just exceptionally good people. And some people really believe that a priest or preacher or pastor or clergyman or whatever, that they can't really do anything wrong. And none of these are good things to be thinking. None of these are true. Preachers, or whatever term you want to use, are just people. They are just Christians. And as much as it would inflate my ego, as Jasmine rightly points out, for me to be put up on a pedestal and to be considered very important, there's nothing that justifies it. That's not the role of a preacher. That's not even the role of an elder in the church, though there is some honor ascribed to elders, but still not like that. So that term reverend really doesn't fit. That's not an appropriate term or title to apply to somebody who has a different role in the church, but is at the same level, if you understand what I mean. Right, holy and reverend.
Yeah.
And it's like really what we're doing is we're saying, okay, all of you and the laity, the laymen and women of the church, you're down here, and then, you know, the pastor is up here. And then, yes, God is up higher, but the pastor is just sort of over everybody. The reverend is so important. And that's not a scriptural thing. That's something that men have created because men like hierarchy. Men like for there to be an ambitious like protocol to follow. I watched a video recently on the whole process of becoming the Pope of the Catholic Church and all the different levels that you go through from being just an ordinary priest on up. And it's like moving up in a company. You start out as an ordinary worker, and then you can be a manager, and then you can be a district manager, and then you can, you know, all. And these are the kind of hierarchies that we create in the church when we want the church to be something that suits us. But God didn't set it up that way. I do, yes. Romans does say that.
How will they call on him in whom they have not believed? How will they believe in him whom they have not heard? And how will they hear without a preacher? How will they preach unless they are sent? Just as it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news of good things.
Yeah. And so that shows there's an importance to the work of teaching the gospel, and that is something that you can do without having the title of preacher, too. Like, it isn't something that only applies to me in this room. That's, you know, for anyone who is spreading the good news of Jesus Christ. And so it's a good work to proclaim the gospel, but it's not something that gives you status. And I'm actually amazed at when complete strangers out in the community find out that I'm a preacher. They'll typically want to say pastor, but when they find that out, some of them get very deferential. They get very, very respectful, and like, this is a little weird. You know, like, why are you treating me this way? I'm not somebody special that deserves this, right? So, but, wow, that was fun. And you know, out of all the titles, doctor is one that makes sense to me because that is a reflection of an education that you have received. And so if you've worked hard to get that education and you want to be called doctor and you really are a doctor, fine. That's great. Well, that's just weird then. So, okay. But that's a name that's supposed to reflect a certain level of education. And that's fine, but we also have to remember what education is good for. Education does not make you a better person than anyone else. It just means you have formal education in something. And so I'm not a doctor of anything because I've not gone to get a doctorate. But even if I had, a doctorate of theology or ministry or something, and I could be Dr. Linden, whether I wanted to be called that or not, it wouldn't make me any more important in here. It's a little, I'm inclined to not be that formal generally. Some people are more formal and want to be called by the title that they've worked for, and that can be fine. It can be. It depends what your reasoning is for it. Yeah, you can, well, that's good. If you call me doctor, it's not going to make sense because I'm not one. So you can just call me Danny. Yeah, the titles get a little weird. But, in any, yes, Jennifer.
I think this is what you're talking about. It's amazing, though,
Jesus came to the earth as the son of a working class person, you know, son of a carpenter, so not part of the religious elite, not part, you know, the son of some great political leader, not in Herod's house, or you know, Jesus didn't come wearing the phylacteries that the Pharisees did, nothing like that. He didn't come with great wealth or great status, anything like that. He came as an ordinary person. The Bible even tells us that Jesus wasn't particularly good looking. You realize that? That Jesus looked like just a pretty ordinary person. And so all the pictures, no, and nothing wrong with that. That's the point. Like, we value all these things. We value the status and who your family is and how much money you have and how good looking you are. And all those things are very important. But Jesus didn't have any of those things for a reason. He came with an important message, and his real status was, of course, like as you say, King of Kings, Lord of Lords, something far greater than any of these earthly things. So if Jesus had come to the world today instead of, you know, in the first century down in Jerusalem, he wouldn't have been, you know, a doctor of theology. He wouldn't have been the son of some great celebrity or political leader or any of that. He would have been, what, the son of a carpenter today, or of a son of a plumber, of a son of a manager at a store, something basic, something like that's not a great prestigious thing. I'm not trying to denigrate any of those occupations. Those are all good things. There's nothing wrong with being a carpenter back then, nothing wrong with being a carpenter today, but it's not exactly King Herod. And it's not exactly a Pharisee as far as the religious world was concerned. But that's how Jesus came into the world, and that was for an important reason. So, okay, we've gotten through just a little bit of this lesson here, but really good discussion in this. Next week, we're going to move on to the three major names for God, Elohim, Yahweh, and Adonai, and talk about what those mean. Unfortunately, in our English translations, those pretty much get translated to God or Lord, and we don't recognize that there's a difference between the two. But these are important terms. They're important names, and they tell us something about God. So we'll do that next week, see how far we can get. Thank you all.